Raising Playful Tots, show number 122. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Raising Playful Tots. I'm glad that you could stop by today. My name is Melitza. Welcome to the Play Space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids so that we can introduce a new play idea. If you're new to the show, welcome, and hi to the regular playmates. Plenty of room, so come join us as we play outside trying to find spider webs and mini beasts. Last week's show, I shared an interview with Stephanie Langford from Keeper of the Home about keeping Christmas simple and meaningful. So if you missed that one, pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at raisingplayfultots.com/shows. Once a month, there's a show that's just me, and today it's 11 ways to give back to your kids. It's a different give back, not through toys and money, but through intentional choices and bold decision making. I hope you'll stick around. Thanks. I'll be right back after this break.
Once upon a time, old Scrooge sat down before the fire.
Ah, humbug.
His glance happened to rest upon a bell. With great astonishment, this bell began to swing, as did every bell in the house. Without a pause, Marley's ghost came on through the heavy door and passed into the room before his eyes.
Who are you? What do you want with me?
I am here to warn you.
You will be haunted by three spirits.
I'd rather not.
Expect the first tomorrow when the bell tolls one.
Expect the second the next night at the same hour. And the third upon the next night.
Couldn't I take them all at once and have it over with?
To read A Christmas Carol and other books online, go to www.read.gov. Explore new worlds. Read.
Yahoo!
Brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. 'Tis the season to be giving, sharing, and serving. But how does that work out for the little guys? How do they really understand giving, sharing, and serving, especially when we're not doing that? This is what I want to talk about today, 11 ways to give back to your kids. Now, often when we hear the title give back, we think of spending more money, doing more things with them, spending more time. But that's not what we're talking about today. Giving back to our kids. I'm thinking no gifts, just actions and shifts in the way in which we're thinking about things. The ideas that you already have inside of you that you want to share, that you want to do, but you've never really given legs to them. They've not come together enough because maybe you had not as much time, not everything was there, you didn't know how to. Well, today is a day that we can look at those things and see if we can get some of these things actually going. This weekend past, I hosted a cookie exchange at the house here. Nothing spectacular about it. It's just a group of friends. We know each other from school and a few neighbours. In the last couple of years, we've invited them round. We bake some cookies and we share them with each other and we chat. This time we talked till the wee small hours of the morning, talked about all sorts of things. It's amazing when you get a whole bunch of ladies together. What was really exciting was that as women, we got to be together and share our parenting ideas, things that weren't working well for us, things that just were odd, different at home, things that are going on with our partners, things that are going on with ourselves, things that are going on with our kids. It was such an amazing time to share. No one was critical. We could just share some of the ideas that we have been doing over the last year. And it came about because we were sitting in a nice warm room with cookies and drinks at hand to be able to do so. To get to that point where we could sit there in my home with all of us, it was a mammoth effort. Partly because my husband's away at the moment. He's been away for about 3 weeks overseas. His dad was very sick, and so he went off to spend some time with him and his family in hospital. And because of the nature of him leaving so quickly and the time of year, it's just kind of thrown everything into hyperdrive. With the cookie exchange already planned, I was thinking, how on earth am I going to do this cookie exchange? Should I cancel? This is the one time of the year. So many things to balance out. And I started to think about giving, sharing, and serving. This time of year, the kids and I like to bake cookies anyway together. We like to give them out to the neighbors. We make them together. We do things together. We talk about it. We go share. We think about what we're going to say to the neighbor, how we're going to share what we've been doing during the year, how to present it, not kind of just shove it in their face or ring the doorbell and run. All of those things that we've been trying to do. And so I thought, well, we can go ahead with the cookie exchange, but I can't do this by myself. And I figured that this was a brilliant opportunity to have some giving, sharing, and serving done by the kids. We would all work together. After all, they were going to still be here. They were going to be here, and a babysitter was going to come this time, and he was going to be with them upstairs while we were downstairs doing our thing. And so they did. They helped cut up things. They helped arrange things. They helped prepare things, and the excitement as we were getting things out, preparing the room, putting out the tablecloths, preparing the food together, they absolutely loved it. And they really wanted to be obviously part of the cookie exchange at the end. They were looking forward to the reactions of the guests that were coming, and they could smell the food that was cooking as well. And it really was an interesting time because I was stressed with preparing all the food ahead of time and making sure that it was ready. But I also had to be present for the children that were there, that we were still working together and that they got to share their talents. The oldest one has been working on cutting carrots. It's been a thing that he just doesn't want to do for the longest time. And we happened to be having carrots. So he had a big bunch of carrots. And for Thanksgiving, he'd done carrots recently. And so now here he was again doing carrots. And so he was really excited that his batons came out better than the ones that he did previously. And they looked good. And here he could serve them to somebody else and be appreciated for it. The middle one was able to pull together all the different watermelon pieces that we were doing. We decided to use a cookie cutter and make shapes out of the watermelon. I think I wouldn't have done that if it wasn't for the fact that I had children with me and it was something that they could do. So I sliced the watermelon into big circle shapes and then gave them the cookie cutters. So each watermelon piece was a shape of a heart and all the different things that we had. It was an idea I'd seen on Pinterest, and he was really happy with the way it looked, and he wanted to arrange it so that it looked good. So here he was sharing what he had, and he was serving what he had too. And this act of giving to the youngest one, he was happy to put out the cutlery, find all the right bags, fetch and carry for us, bring things in, do all sorts of different things. And it got me to thinking of how much I was giving back to the kids at that time. I was giving of my time, giving of my experience. We could laugh about things together. We could share in the whole experience of doing something together. They were excited, and they stayed up really late to see if they could have cookies at the end because they knew that there'd be an amazing amount of cookies at the end. And they did wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and woke me up to say if they could have a cookie for breakfast the next day. But they were really thrilled and wanted to know all about the evening, what had happened downstairs, even though they had snuck down quite a few times to have a listen and to ask that rogue question, can I have something to eat, when they know that they could, but they just wanted to come in and see what we're all doing. Do your kids do that too? But they had an interest because of the giving, the sharing and the serving that they had done before. So when I changed my heart from seeing that the cookie exchange was this ginormous idea and how am I going to be able to do it all? When I shifted my thoughts and thought, how can I change this into a service or a sharing or a giving opportunity? How can we all work together as a family? How can we contribute together and feel a oneness? It completely changed the way that that evening went. The kids really enjoyed the cookie exchange. We, as friends and neighbours, could enjoy the cookie exchange, and for completely different reasons. So how about you? How do you give back to your kids? How do you share experiences so that they understand all the things that go into creating something and doing something? They saw the aftermath. They saw all of the things that had to be picked up and put away. They knew which things that they wanted to go for, which creamy dip they wanted to dip their stuff in, and crackers, and who had all the carrots, etc. They knew where all those things are. What about us? How do we give back to our kids? How do we share? Do you have a story like that? Do you have something that you've turned around and changed for your children so that you're giving back to them something, an experience that they will learn from? Let's talk about the 10 ways that you can give back to your kids. Number one, be present. The saying goes, it's not your presence that they want, it's your presence that they want. They actually want your time. Now, at this time of year, in December, that can seem a really odd thing because we're all gearing up for presents. But if you'd listened to the show last week, show number 121, you'll have heard Stephanie Langford talk about the amount of presents that you can give and the way in which we do that. Do we give too many? Do we even think about how many presents we're going to give and how overwhelming it can be for children? So I guess we should be intentional about our things that we do, how we do them. So let's look at our presents. How many of you have smartphones, iPads, little gadgets that we use to get online or to deal with each day? I think most of us have. Do you set a reasonable limit? And are you purposeful when you use it? Or do you use it all the time when the kids are around, regardless? Do you struggle to get to grips with when to use your smartphone and when to be with the kids, or how to do both of them at the same time? Is it something that you have thought about in a moment by yourself? Because every family is different. And for some of us, not using our smartphone when the children are around is probably a good thing. And for some of us, it's a necessary. It's something that we really need to do. But having a purpose, an intention about when we use them and how we use them is really important. So maybe that means that you set yourself a time limit. Maybe there are certain apps that you'll delete or that you won't use at all. Or maybe there are certain apps for productivity that you will love and you want to use those all the time. I've just recently discovered Evernote and absolutely love it because for productivity, if I've got an idea, I can just put it down really quickly. And because there's an audio function on there, I don't have to write it down or type it down. I can just speak it and it's done. There are possibilities of actually turning off the internet for certain places so you don't just check your Facebook page or your Twitter page during the day, that you can spend time with the children and know that it's not actually there. Maybe you want to have it with the kids and you want to spend time with your smartphone and the child. Maybe you're doing an activity together that revolves around it. Are you intentional about this? Are you thinking carefully about when you use it, what you use it, and how you use it for? Something that we've talked about a lot recently, with three children in the home, there is a tendency that once one starts talking, encourages the other to talk, and so on and so on. And then there's this big cacophony of everybody going, "Mum this, mum that, mum this." And you almost want to go, "Stop," and make a big noise about it. And I've said to them that when you come and want to speak to an adult, that you should touch us and see that we are stopping what we're doing and actually turning around and looking at you, and we're saying yes, so that you know that we are actually listening to what you're saying. Because many a time, because there's so many conversations going on and so many of us in the room, I didn't know that they were talking to me. And and just having that conversation with the kids and saying, what you have to say is important. What I have to say is important. Just come over and touch me and make sure that you know that I am listening. And it works the other way. I do the same to them. So it gives them, I'm giving back to them a way to communicate effectively with me. It has an added benefit of reducing the yelling, although we still have a lot of yelling up and down the stairs. I don't know whether that's because I have a house full of boys, whether it's just my personality and I'm not used to yelling a lot, and so I find it really hard to hear lots of shouting and yelling, or whether it's just convenient just to be able to just call someone and then they come. It's not an evil, it's not a terror. I think it's really just me and my personality. But it's not as much as it used to be. Number two, be passionate. When was the last time you were really passionate about something in front of the kids that they were really excited about it? Now, not their passion, but your passion. I know this is a busy season for you right now because you have young children, maybe more young children to come, and older children as well. So you're getting pulled up both ends, let alone with other families, extended families, your partner, all these things that are going on, work, all grasping for your attention. But what are you really passionate about? Do the kids know what really makes you excited? It was interesting the other day, my oldest said to me, what do you really like doing? Because I know you like talking on that microphone. And I thought that was a really weird thing for him to say. But he's seen the microphone. He sees it out because it's out. He can see it. And so for him, that was what he thought that I must really love doing. And we had this whole conversation about what he thought was my most favorite thing in the whole world to do. And it turned into this big conversation. And we all talked about what was our big passion, our thing that we really liked. And it was really interesting hearing what that was. The kids were really surprised. I was really surprised. And it was just nice to be able to talk about those different things. So be passionate and show your passion with your kids. Talk to them about the things that you found really interesting before you had them. Share pictures. Talk about things that you've been doing before and bring them along to the experiences that you're doing now. And if you haven't got a passion, find one. Find something that really makes you excited and see if you can do something with that in a way that you can share with the kids. Number three, listen. Listening is one of those things that we all think that we can do quite well until you get a 3-4-year-old that's telling a story that's going all around the houses, really difficult to follow, and our mind starts wandering to to-do lists, other things that we've got on our mind, that exam that we should be studying for, all the different things that are happening, and you can be really out of whack with what that child is actually saying. But if we really listen, I mean, get down to their level, drown out all of the life, and view just them. Look into their eyes, maybe hold their hands. Do what it takes to be present and listen to what they're saying. Then we start to notice the tiredness, the irritation, the we don't want to travel around anymore, the music is really bothering me. And you get to be more in tune with what they're doing. But not just that, they get to see you as well and they get to learn your reactions. They get to see, oh, mum's about to blow a gasket. She's not looking very happy. They get to learn to see your facial expressions and see what's happening. And this all stems from listening. Number four, laugh. Laughing is contagious. But if you're tired, busy, rushing, which is often marked in our season of life, you can look back and have whole days where you've not laughed, you've not been excited, you've not been happy. And yet, it's exactly what we need at this time, because there's so many things that are happening, so many fun and exciting things that are going on. You know, I can remember my grandmother's laugh and the deep laugh of my granddad. And children need to see you laughing and hear us laughing at all times. Now, we won't be able to laugh at all times. I don't mean all the time that we should be laughing, but at all the different times that we are with them, the different seasons of our lives, the different places that we are, they should be able to see the stern mum when you have to tell them off because that's what they need, because you need to parent them. They need to see that the funny mum who has to run in the school sports day that trips over. They need to see the mum that works really hard and goes out to work or does something at home or does other things. They need to see all these different sides, but they need to see a mum that can laugh. Laugh through things that are sad, that they need to pick themselves up from. Laugh through things that are just really, really funny. They need to see us laughing. We can give back to our kids that sense of grounding, that they feel loved by hearing laughter. How can you be scared in a place where there is laughter? Number 5, show compassion. Now, we all parent, and so sometimes that means we have to discipline. But sometimes our day can be just full of disciplining. Not only do we not laugh, which we just talked about before, but we find it then really hard to show compassion. You know, the middle one is one of these children that when he gets really upset and really mad and he explodes and it's all crazy and there's fallout for a good 5, 10, half an hour as he goes a bit crazy and tries to get hold of himself. And then it's like a flick of a switch. He's absolutely fine. He wants cuddles. He wants to just kind of get on. He doesn't really remember what's happened previously. It's all done and dusted. He's finished with that emotion. He's completely done. But he's left this amazing fallout with all of the people that surround him who, oh yeah, they remember what he did and they remember how he was. And he finds that time really difficult. What to do now? Because he said, constantly he will say, I said I'm sorry and I didn't mean to and I shouldn't have done that. Why won't they play with me anymore? And as a parent, we've had to show him compassion in that sense and model that for his siblings to see, because it is really tricky when somebody's been really as hard as he had been. And then it seems as if they're not remorseful, but they are. They deal with it in a completely different way. So showing compassion. Do we show compassion, or do we still have that resentment that we hang on to when they've doodled on the wall? And yes, that happens to us. Or doodled on the table. Yes, that happens to us. Or on the carpet at school. Yes, that's happened to us. How do we show compassion after we've disciplined? Do we harbour that grudge and keep it forever and ever? And can we do better at letting go of that and showing more compassion? I hope we can. Number 6, be different. When you first have a child and you see all the different parenting books and you think, wow, there are so many different things that you can do. You get so much advice. People are happy to tell you things. You pick up things from other people. You can be really overwhelming. And then there comes a point when you realize that you're being swept along and you're doing things that everybody else is doing because of the people that you're with each day. Maybe it's preschool people that you know, maybe you gave birth in the same ward or had an antenatal class or an aqua aerobics class together. But these people are your friends. They're the people that you're around all the time. And is this what you really want? Is this who you really want to be? So number 6, being different. That's something that you can do just for your family. Finding what really works. Now, that will mean that you are going against the status quo on some issues. There will be things that you will do that maybe your good friend doesn't do or won't do, and that's okay. It doesn't mean that you're right and that she's wrong. It's just that we all have different ways of doing things. I know that lots of people can feel the pressure to have to do one thing and be without the other. I know the debate often happens with media, especially with media with young children. There are guidelines and good reasons why you should do what you do with media. But when it comes down to it, you should make those decisions based on what your family feels is the right thing. Once you've got all the information that you can, and you make that decision. Now, it doesn't mean that your friend who does more or less than you is right or wrong. It's just that that's okay for their family. And that should be celebrated instead of us trying to influence them to do the same as us necessarily. It's nice when we share these stories and learn about different things. Because after all, our information that we know are by the closest people that are around us. This really hit home for me when I was living overseas, and I've talked about that in a previous show. When I was in a place in Italy where I was with people that were of a different age group, from a different country, and I was in a different country as well. So we had all of these things swirling around, and my influences were from everywhere. And I was confused, I think is the right way to say it, knowing which way to turn, what I really thought. When you're establishing yourself, trying to know who you are, where you want to direct your family, you go down many paths, and that's okay. You then start to develop a sense of who you are and what you want to be, and you take the knowledge from different sources. Now, for me, podcasts were an avenue. It didn't matter that I lived in a place where I felt that I was alone, because I had access, just like how books were for lots of people, I had access to podcasts that could take me completely out of where I was. I could learn about all sorts of different things and be really passionate about those things and learn about different things way before they would have ever come to the community that I was locally in. So I really enjoyed speaking to local friends and local people while I was living there, but also experiencing other people from around the world online and through podcasts. So I would encourage you, how are you being different and how does that fit with you? Does it excite you that you're doing something that's slightly different to your friends? Or does it worry you that people will notice that you do something slightly different? I think we should be different. We should feel able to do all sorts of different things and encourage our children to be able to do the same. And we often have the conversation in our house, well, your friend and their family do that type of thing, and we and our family do this type of thing. And it's a really interesting conversation because it's not saying that what we're doing is right and they're doing is terrible over there, because it's not. It's just that we all do different things. And that's come up recently a lot with faith and religion, when we know people that experience different faiths and do different things, especially during the Christmas season. There's lots of people that are doing all sorts of different things. Some are coming into the nativity place, some won't be. Some will be dressing up, some won't be. Some will be off school, some won't be. It's made for interesting conversations and learning that it's okay to be different, that you can experience and do different things, and it's okay that nothing bad will happen to you and in the family just because you do what you do and they do what they do. We're actually sharing that and living that for real. Number 7, establish traditions, rituals that make your family unique. At this time of year, when you look on Pinterest or you look around, you see all of these amazing crafts, amazing food displays. And just seeing all of those things can make you think, oh my goodness, the pressure to do all of these things, I have to do something perfect. And I think if you actually look at what you're doing as a family and think, what is really important to us? You know, we really like going outdoors. We really like Christmas trees. We want to get our own Christmas tree. We're going to go to one of those nurseries where you can pick your own Christmas tree, and we're going to make that a family tradition that we do each year. We're going to go and pick our Christmas tree. That would be a perfect solution if you are an outdoor family who loves to do that thing with finding your Christmas tree. Maybe you are a family that loves to craft and you would want to do a craft activity during the Christmas time. Maybe you don't like crafts at all and would prefer just to do an activity of some sort, or maybe you want to bake or do an activity that way. It doesn't make you a good or bad parent because you do or you don't do those things. But establishing some sort of tradition gives a lovely rhythm to the whole season, something for them to look forward to. Last year, we had the advent calendar was done in slightly a different way than we've done it this year. I don't know what happened. I think in the putting away of the advent calendar, the boxes must have dropped and some of the activities must have fallen out. And then when they were boxes put away, they were just kind of shoved in and nobody really noticed. And so this year it's been quite interesting. Sometimes we open a box and an activity is supposed to be in each box, and there's been nothing that's been inside. And the first couple of days that happened, I was a bit amused, thinking, oh, what's happened with that? But I got to see, because I realised the numbers were in a different order, that the boxes itself had obviously fallen out and people had put them back in, and maybe something had happened to the little post-it notes that were inside with the activities to do on the inside there. And it was interesting because now we're more than halfway through the Advent time. The boys can remember. I remember this time last year, we did the activity where we had to dress up in something red and something green. And I dressed in this outfit and they were talking about it. They were excited about it and talking about it. And that only happened because they knew that that happened in this season. We did that type of activity. It was open-ended enough. It didn't matter how old they were. The winner was a person that had whichever colour they were. They were dressed in as many of those colours as possible. And they had a short time limit to do it. So establishing a tradition doesn't have to be so difficult that you find it impossible to do. Now, frankly, with three kids in and out of school and parties and all sorts of things going on, it can get really busy and I really have to guard the time. But having simple activities that alternate and have traditions and rituals that are associated with it is just perfect. We like to sing and play the piano, and so we'll sit together and play and sing. And the youngest one is in piano lessons now as well. So I bought him one of the simple Christmas tunes books. So he will play that, and the oldest one rather. And the youngest one is singing. He had lots of carols to learn at school, so he could join in too. And we all just sang and smiled and had fun singing songs and doing it together. That's something that we try and do each year. It brings us together. It's a lovely way of establishing a tradition. Now, for us, it works. We like music. That works well with our family. There have been other things that we've tried and we've just said, you know, we're not going to do an activity every day. That can't work for us, and it will make us more stressful. So we're just not going to do that. Number 8, learn their style. By that, I mean their 5 love languages. If you've not read the book by Gary Chapman, I would wholeheartedly do that, The 5 Love Languages. It's a book that we originally, my husband and I, read together. I got the children's version for the kids, and I look at it periodically, but it really helps because it establishes in your mind the best way to help serve your spouse in the first instance, or your children. What do they love to do the most? What do they like? And there's 5 different love languages that they talk about. And I know that for most children, the gift of time is what they absolutely love. But for others, it'll actually be gifts, it will be physical touch, any of the other five love languages that they have. And when you know what it is about your child, and you know what it is about yourself, when you give in that way to them and you share, you can really serve them. I know, for example, my youngest at the moment has a passion for writing. He's learning to write his name with all of the letters the right way round. He just wants to do that. And so he is constantly writing on pieces of paper. We see it everywhere, anywhere that he can scrawl his name on. But he wants you to be with him when he's doing it. So if you're rushing around the house doing different things, he wants to take that piece of paper with him and with you. And you, so, for example, I'm in the one room sort of folding laundry. He's there with me doing the work. And then I think, oh, I need to go and start dinner. I leave that, come downstairs to do something else. He comes with me. Now he's on the table and he wants to do that. He wants to spend that time with me. And so for me to just stop and spend time with him and look at what he's doing, I know that that fills his cup. That makes him feel better. Have you read that book, How Full Is Your Bucket? I think that's what it's called. That's a fantastic book to read, and it goes along with the learning styles and the five love languages, because it talks about emotions in such a tangible way that children can understand what's going on. Number 9, dream with them. When was the last time that you actually dreamed, you thought about what life would be like next year, maybe 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and how exciting that would be for you and for them? Have you ever talked about it out loud and shared with them what you see that they will be doing, and kind of letting them go along on this imaginary journey with you? So let's see. I have a 4-year-old at the moment, and a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old. And if I said to them, oh, in 3 years' time, what do you think will be happening? Well, because we're a military family, it could mean that we're not living where we are now. We could be living somewhere else. So that always starts our imaginations with, where can we live if we could live anywhere in the world? Where would it be? And what would life be like for us where we are? It's just really exciting to be able to share that type of imagination, what it would be like. And the funny things that they say, things like, I'll know all my times tables by then. And so you get to know that maybe that's a bit of a struggle right now. Or that they'll say that I'll have lots of friends, and my friends and I will be playing lots of games together. But if our children don't ever see us dreaming, then how can they really dream for themselves? That's something that we can really give back to our kids, is that way of dreaming. Maybe there's something that we're looking forward to. Now, it tends to be financially that we talk about these things. So we might say, oh, I can't wait to get the so-and-so car or buy the so-and-so house. And all of these are focused on money, and the kids get to see that. But I'm talking about our dreams. Maybe you're saying, I really wanted to do chemistry at university and take a degree in it. I've always loved chemistry. It's something that I've really wanted to do. And for whatever reason, probably good reason, you haven't done it so far. But you can dream that with the kids and say, like, yeah, in 3 years' time, I want to be going to university and I want to be doing some studying. Get that conversation going. Talking about what you really would love to do encourages them to set goals, make plans, have forethought into what they're going to do so that they can lean towards going towards it. When was the last time you dreamed out loud that they could hear your dreams? Number 10, teach them how to heed criticism and shed defeat. This is a personal one. When somebody criticizes what you're doing, we have a tendency to lash out. Children are like that. We are like that. It's really difficult. But when we're at home with them, we have an opportunity to show them and model them a different way of responding. So how about we set ourselves a challenge? When somebody criticizes us and we're in the presence of the kids, see if you can find a better way of dealing with the criticism than lashing out. Now, thinking in the moment and hoping that, oh, I'll think of something at that time, just won't work. You have to practice it beforehand. So think about it now. How can you heed criticism and shed the defeat, but keep going? Because there are going to be so many times in our lives where we have this cycle of trying really hard at something and not achieving it, and hearing the criticism and turning in on ourselves and not getting to where we want to be. But having to turn it around and come back up again, get that enthusiasm, get that inspiration going again, and then again, things aren't going well, there'll be criticism and you'll find the defeat. How do you keep going? How do you get back? How do you encourage your four-year-old that's building that block tower and it keeps falling over? Do you just go over there and fix it for them and show them, like, here it is, this is how you're doing it? Do you encourage them and say, you know, you're doing okay, let's try this way? Do you encourage them so that they can shed the defeated look? I know that this is a really tricky area, but really important. Teaching them how to heed criticism and shed defeat. We can really give back to our kids by showing how we do that. The last one, number 11, teach them how to adjust their behavior to their situation. Now, there's the old story of when they're at grandma and granddad's house, that they will eat all of the sweets in the whole world and be fine. When they're at a public place, they will spectacularly have the biggest tantrum ever. There are certain things that are just a given that will just happen in different places. And yet when we come home, we don't talk about any of those situations at another time. So when we go out in public and we're with our kids in a shopping area and we're having something to eat, we can talk about table manners and how to sit and what to do while we're there. We can eat our food and have a good time, but be mindful of all the other people that are around us. But we can't do that if we don't explicitly talk about those things when we're there. We can be in a public place. Maybe we're at a church service because of the time of the year. Maybe we're at a doctor's surgery waiting our turn with lots of other people. Maybe we're at the shop standing in line waiting to pay for something. We can talk about how we stand and what we do. It doesn't have to be you must do it this way, but you can encourage them and praise them for what they are actually doing. You're standing so nicely waiting for mummy to get this finished. That's so nice that you can actually stand there. I can see you standing completely still. You're looking forward and look, your hands are in your pocket, keeping absolutely still, and you're just using your eyes to look. You can talk all of those types of things through so that they understand how to behave in different places. We do them a disservice when we don't remember to do that, but we discipline them by telling them off that you shouldn't touch, you mustn't do these things, when it's much easier to say to them that this is what you can do and this is what you could do. It's much easier for us to do that. It's almost like saying, don't think about a blue elephant. Well, now you're thinking about a blue elephant. It's much easier to try and tell them what they can do rather than what they can't do. But teaching them how to adjust their behavior to their situation can be tricky. And it's not something that you should do every time and all the time. I guess with all 11 of these ways we have to give back to our kids, we can get caught up with trying to be the perfect mum, the perfect parent. But that's not what this podcast is about, and that's not what this list is about of the 11 ways to give back to your kids. It's about being intentional thinking about the actions that we're doing, how we are really raising our playful tots. Now, I've given you 11 ways today. There are many more. I want you to choose one. One that really spoke to you today. One that you really thought about. That could be us. I think I could do this. And I challenge you this week to think a little bit more about that. Maybe write it down somewhere. How can you be intentionally facilitating that in your family? How can you raise a playful tot by using one of these 11? I would love to hear from you what you think. Which one touched you the most? Which one made you think the most? Which one do you want to see an action on? It's not a long challenge, just for this week. Something that you can focus on and look at for your family for this week. Come over to the website at raisingplayfultots.com/122. This is where the show notes will be. Why don't you get in touch and let us know which number really meant something for you today. If you want to write a little bit about what it is, that's fine. Maybe you just want to drop off and say, for me it was number 6, or for me it was number 2. You can leave a voicemail there. You can click the button there on the side and you can leave a voicemail, or you can just go to raisingplayfultots.com/feedback and you can tell me there. And I listen to all the voicemails. If you don't want it to be played on the show, then you can say that, or we can play them on the show if you've got something that you want to share with everybody else. During this December, I hope that you have fun times with the kids, that you have expectations of fun and play, that you feel empowered to make decisions based on good ideas that you have from other people, that you are encouraged through places like this and your online journey. Just quickly before I go, I'm working on the best of 2012 shows. If you have a show that's touched you, encouraged you, challenged you, inspired you, made you laugh out loud, made you smile, made you decide to do something different, maybe you just want to hear from another guest again, I would love to hear from you. Get in touch, come over to the show notes, or go by email, let us know what that is, and I'll try and include as many as I can in that best of 2012. Now, the best of 2012 show usually is a compilation of all the different shows that we've had, just snippets of it, to see the most important things that people have enjoyed or I've found or that you have enjoyed so much that you've downloaded over and over again. And that will be coming up before the end of December. The week of Christmas, I won't be producing a podcast, which I'm sure that's what you expected from somebody that's trying to raise a playful tot. We are spending time together, and actually making a podcast takes up quite a bit of time, and I'd like to spend that time with the kids this time and actually decompress from all the media and the social media and all the blogging and all the work that I do at that time. There will be, of course, shows available for you to come and listen to, and we will be right here in the new year. There will be at least another show before the end of 2012 that comes out, and then we'll be right back in 2013 with lots and lots of shows. That's about it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to Raising Playful Tots. If you're a fan of Raising Playful Tots and like what you've heard, we'd love for you if you could share some of this love by visiting raisingplayfultots.com/love. What this will do is it will create a tweet in your Twitter feed that will say something like, hey, you're listening to this podcast, the Raising Playful Tots podcast with me, which is at Play Activities. And then when you tweet that, then it will go out to your friends and let them know that this is what you like listening to, and maybe it will encourage them to come over and have a listen to. This is something that I've always found really... You know, we all need a little bit of encouragement and inspiration and challenge and nod your head moments where we can feel comfortable with knowing that we are doing the right thing or we're amongst friends. And we don't always have the opportunity to seek out these things, but if your friends obviously like, but you like, if you like the Raising Playful Tots show, then perhaps maybe your friends would like the show too. If you'd like to comment on the show notes, you come over to raisingplayfultots.com/122 and you'll feel free to leave the comments there. All the links are there also. Don't forget, at the website, there are lots of things that are there for. There's a resources page. You can start your Amazon shopping there if you're doing Amazon this year. You have links to all of the shows that we've been doing throughout the 3+ years of doing Raising Playful Tots, so you can access the archive that's there. I hope you're having a fabulous season with lots of play activities going on with you guys. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 122. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye!